afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Tuesday, July 26th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Gosh, can you believe it? Almost the end of July. Hello, Melody.
No, I can't believe it.
I know.
Hey, August, summer's over.
On the verge. Happy Aunts and Uncles Day. Can you believe it?
Aww.
Day to officially give thanks to our mom and dad's brothers and sisters who have filled our lives with fun and laughter and love and incredible memories. Plus an occasional generous birthday cash. And interestingly, did you know on this day in 1775, the U.S. postal system was created with Ben Franklin as its first postmaster general. Postal rate back then varied according to the so-called distant zone. It's the distance a letter was to be carried from the post office where it entered and the mail to its final destination via horseback or later train. Standardized rates were adopted in 1847 for mail sent from one place to another. 6 cents for the first ounce of a letter. And in case you were wondering, that's the equivalent in purchasing power of about $211 today. Yes, the dollar has lost 97% of its purchasing power since then. In other words, Melody, a dollar today buys about 2.8% of what it could buy way back then.
Yep, that's what we've been saying. And you know, 6 cents seems like that was a lot of money even at that time.
I know, right?
Yeah.
What is it today? I don't even know what it is today anymore.
It's over 50 cents. Closing in on 60. And registered and insured packages. I mean, it used to cost us, you know, $12, $13. Now I can barely get out a package under 40.
You're kidding.
Nope. Oh, and these, and we drop ship our large orders by FedEx. So our smaller orders, they range anywhere from 35 to 40 plus.
Wow.
Yeah, we only charge, so I mean, our costs, I don't know how much longer we can absorb, but we're going to have to start increasing our shipping costs too. It's just outrageous. And
only so much you can be expected to do.
Yes, absolutely. Hold on, let me turn that.
What did gold do?
Well, let's go ahead and. Do you want me to go into the market report?
Sure.
Let's do that. Sure. Okay, let's see. Gold today is down $2. I gotta turn this phone down. I don't know why. Gold today, $2.40, 17.18. Silver was up 16 cents at $18.71. Platinum was down 8 at 882. And palladium was up 6 at 2078. Did see a little bit of strength from the U.S. dollar today, up 0.69 at 107.17. Crude oil was down 1.69 at 95.01. Paper markets today, the Dow shed over 200 points. You know, they're blaming it all on Walmart. It's all Walmart's fault, you know? And with their profit warning. And so the Dow was down 228 points at 31,761. The S&P was down 45 at 3,921, a little over 1%. NASDAQ was down almost 2% at 11,562. Asian markets all positive except the Nikkei. Europe was all negative. Not a green stock market in Europe at all. 10-year yield still holding at 2.80%. Natural gas, that was up almost 2% again, 8.886. So that continues to increase as we see the the other oil prices come down just a little bit. So good thing there. And a lot of crazy things are going on. And the big day is tomorrow, I guess, Dave. I mean, as far as everyone holding their breath to see what Jerome Powell is going to do. And I mean, it shouldn't be any shock to anybody. We all know he's going to increase it by, you know, 0.75%, 75 basis point. I don't know how it could surprise the markets. I mean, everybody knows it, so I'm not quite sure why everybody thinks the markets are going to be surprised.
I think they're going to be surprised by the amount of the increase. I think it could be in, you know, the statement you know, the Fed speak that comes after that. I think that's what could surprise some investors.
Yeah, but they've been warned since the last rate increase that it was going to be, you know, 75 basis points. And now he could go higher. That would shock the markets, wouldn't it? What if he went a full percentage point? Woohoo! That would be fun. That would be interesting. Come on, Jerome. Show you've got some spine there and raise those rates.
Conventional wisdom just a couple weeks ago that mm-hmm. they could go that high.
Yeah.
So, until all the R talk.
Yeah, well, yeah, right. But, you know, they're trying to soften that, too. So, I don't know. You're never, ever going to get the truth because they don't want any panic. And they will be there to accommodate these markets when they need to be. That's, I think they've proven that, Dave, don't you think?
No question about it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's you know, there's other folks out there saying that, you know, Jerome Powell will, you know, and you're right, it's going to be the Fed speak that makes a difference. But I can't imagine that the Fed speak is going to be any different than what it was. But, you know, we'll see, right?
It's true. 2:30 comes comes the press conference or Commerce Department comes out with the second quarter GDP first reading.
That's Thursday, correct?
Yep, that's yep. Thursday.
Yep.
Yep, and that's what, you know, if they're going to, if it shows even a small contraction, it's going to suggest to some anyway that the economy could be heading for recession or is in it. Some believe it technically would be in one because it would be the second negative quarter in a row. Or as we know, the National Bureau of Economic Research, NBER, uses other criteria to judge a recession, and it's not expected to declare one just yet. And so a number of analysts are betting the Fed will ultimately cause a recession, an official one, with its aggressive policy tightening. The futures markets is actually pricing in an about face by the Fed next year. Traders are now betting the Fed will begin cutting rates by next spring after taking the Fed funds rate to 3.4%. By the end of this year.
That's where they had to turn around during Trump, you know. And, you know, once they got up to that, you know, that 3% plus, it started putting a damper on things and hitting harder, and it was more noticeable. And, you know, the administration was crying, cut those rates. And Powell did. And so the IMF also came out today. They're cutting global growth projections for this year and next year. Hey, they say it's gloomy. It's gloomy out there. And I saw an article yesterday by Noriel Rubini, and I mentioned it briefly on this program, but he says anybody who thinks that, you know, the recession that we enter is going to be mild, he says they're just delusional. And that I agree with them. And so anybody who thinks this is going to be a soft landing and so forth, they're out of their minds, because you can't have the problems that we have, the debt that we have. And you can go back and look at some of our other recessions and so forth. We haven't had this amount of debt. We haven't had the problems in all those other times that we've had as we have today. So
indeed. I'll talk about you and I will talk about 8 signs that we're either in or approaching a recession in today's second segment.
Oh, terrific. I mean that in a good way. So, but the IMF comes out and says, nope, we're looking for the world economies to grow a collective 3.2% this year before slowing to 2.9% in 2023. And, but hey, you know, at least it's not negative, but you know, hey, this is a Washington-based institute, so, yeah. Dave?
You're not questioning the credibility of these, their numbers, are you?
Moi? Moi?
Yes. Mm. Yes, yes. Well, the anticipated slowdown would mark the first quarterly contraction in global real GDP since the pandemic began. A plausible but less likely alternative scenario could see global growth falling to around 2.6% this year and 2.0% next, according to the IMF, putting global growth in the bottom 10% of outcomes since 1970. Now, last month, the World Bank slashed its projections to 2.9% from an April, I believe, estimate of 4.1%. It's a big downgrade. Now, apparently, worsening growth prospects here, as well as in China and India, drove the IMF revisions downward. They see U.S. GDP down 1.4 percentage points to 2.3. And that's driven by weaker than expected growth in the first half of this year so far, reduced household purchasing power, / high inflation, and the Fed's tightening monetary policy. Now, China's economy seen growing 1.1 percentage points less previous estimates, now expected to grow 3.3% this year. India's forecast, another big democracy, cut 0.8 of a percentage point, but to 7.4%, still a lot of construction in that country. Meanwhile, the Eurozone's outlook lowered just 0.2 of a percentage point to 2.6%, although the growing or continuing fallout from Putin's war in Ukraine is still the big uncertainty there, Melody.
Mm. You know, home prices in May, they're continuing to rise, up almost 20% compared with the same month last year. And, of course, this is all according to the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index. So this is the second straight month of slower increases. And we certainly have seen the housing market cool due to these high mortgage rates. And, of course, you know, we mentioned the I word, inflation. And in April, the annual gain was 20.6. So, you know, it's – I mean, when you talk about new home, I mean, I would think that this would – this is going to drop significantly soon. I mean, when you're having the new home builders, I mean, new homes, that demand dropped, what, 8%, Dave? I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that these prices are going to still see any type of gain, even though they're still down from before. But so you've got 4 of 20 cities reported higher price increases in 12 months that ended in May. versus the 12-month period that ended in April. So, you know, you still have cities that are seeing increasing annual gains. So.
Yeah, Craig Lazara, who's managing director at S&P DJI, says that despite this deceleration, growth rates are still extremely robust, with all three composites at or above the 98th percentile historically. Well, that's pretty high, I guess. The mortgage rate's been rising steadily since January, when the average rate in the 30-year fixed was just around 3%. Now it's averaging 5.75%. That's down from a high of a little over 6, but still pretty doggone high, given the recent inflation in home prices, which are up again 40% since the pandemic, the start of the pandemic. This quick rise in interest rates this year has hit affordability hard. Potential buyers, especially first-time buyers, have been sidelined as a result. Now, George Radu at Realtor.com believes that the short-term transactions are feeling the pressure. Sales of existing homes down now for 5 straight months.
Well, you know, yesterday we talked about how much more difficult it is for the elderly, the senior citizens of this country, to get by with, you know, the I word, inflation. And, you know, we forget, too. We talk about inflation, and, you know, we have this, this is the highest inflation since 1981. People are struggling. And it really does irritate me, you know, when I listen to these analysts and so forth on TV and they say, you know, the folks out there, they never include themselves, you know, and that just irritates me. Instead of saying we, everybody, you know, it's always, you know, it just bothers me. But anyway, people are struggling to keep up with expenses. And they are putting less money aside for emergencies and for long-term financial goals. I mean, how many times have we reported over the past 10, 15 years people didn't have $1,000 in their accounts to pay for any type of emergencies? You know, another survey was $800. Another survey was $400. And you got to remember, too, think of all these people that have been out of work for, you know, during that first year of 2020. We're going to finish this report up here when we come back from this break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit my website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And boy, was that a heavy sigh. Did I hear a heavy sigh?
Oh, boy, I don't know.
Yes, I did.
Did you? Wow.
You did.
I was unconscious. My apologies.
Yeah. Intake some of that oxygen. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Anyway, we're heading into the break. We were talking about 43% of Americans had expected to add to their debt. This is coming off, you know, 2 years of many who didn't work, many who were on unemployment, many who couldn't pay their rent. The government paid it for them. Or they didn't have to pay at all. And I mean, they're not even catching up already. And then they get smacked in the face with a higher inflation rate since 1981. So yeah, you tell me that people are doing well out there and we're not headed into a recession or we're not in there one already. So 43% of Americans expect to add to their debt in the next 6 months. Most will rely on credit cards to bridge the gap between what they need and what they can afford, Dave.
Well, already this rise in borrowing, together with auto loans, student debt, mortgages, has jumped total household debt to just shy of $16 trillion, 15.84 at the beginning of the year. Matt Schultz of LendingTree says that many people take on debt because they feel good about their financial situation, thus aren't too worried about paying a little interest if it gets them what they need. But, he adds, plenty of others take on debt because they have to, just to make ends meet. Last year, the number of banking customers who consider themselves financially healthy has literally plummeted. That's an indication inflation starting to impact most people's economic well-being. And, of course, as we'll talk about more about the warning signs of a recession, just consumer sentiment overall, just in the pits. In fact, Americans' overall satisfaction with their financial condition now stands at a 12-month low. Those classifying themselves as financially unhealthy, 64%, almost two-thirds of Americans. Live in interesting times, so, Melody.
Well, since we're on this topic, I'm just going to jump ahead. Something we're going to talk about a little bit later. But 20% of Americans are afraid to check their credit card balances.
I know.
So,
right?
I mean, nearly one in five are afraid to check their credit card statements. This is according to a survey from travel website Upgraded Points, which they surveyed 3,500 people. And now they're using their credit cards to get by for their needs. And even for those who were able to trim their credit cards, you know, again, they're not working. They're not getting any more money from government. There hasn't been any more stimulus checks given out except to, you know, corporations and so forth. And, credit card balances jumped $71 billion year over year, topping $841 billion during the first quarter just this year alone. So the average credit card interest rate is 17.5% as of July 20. And it may approach a record high of 19% by the end of the year. I would expect if he raises it by 75 basis points, he's going to reach it by the end of the month.
Yeah, yeah.
Forget the year stuff. So, you know, so again, you know, you have people that are using their credit because they don't have any money. They don't have any cash because everything, the inflation is eating everything up. And they don't put anything off because we're a society of consumers. And what do we do best? We consume. And it doesn't work. And you get yourself in a spot. And so, again, this is going to turn around, Dave. Would you like to add to that before we?
Yeah, just a lot of Jones in it throughout the country, even the world. Keeping up with your neighbors, your friends, your family. Just got to stay within your lane and live within your means. You know, if you can't pay cash for, you know, computer, furniture, new car, television, then wait until you can, especially now with, you know, some say, well, you know, inflation's so high, I want to get it now before prices continue to go up. Well, look, prices going up 9-10%, you're paying 17-18%. On a lot of credit
cards. And that's just
cards.
And that's just the average, Dave. Many of them are higher than that.
Indeed. Indeed they are. But the bottom line is, if you do have a credit card or two or three or five, hopefully not, check your balance regularly, at least once a month. Know where you stand. And if you're dealing with high balances, call the bank, call the issuing bank. Most of them will work with you, but they're certainly not going to take the initiative, not when they're able to charge you that much interest. Call them and ask for a lower interest rate. It works more often than you'd think.
You know, it is interesting why they don't put caps on interest rates for what credit cards can charge.
It's crazy.
It really is.
It really is outrageous.
You know, because they're getting their money, you know, zero. But anyway, it's it kind of always makes me wonder, you know, and they just get away with everything. But they will lower your rates. They can and they will lower your rates.
Oh, yeah. Back up one to signs of a recession.
Sure. You know, everybody's looking towards Thursday GDP report, whether it's going to show whether we're in a recession or not. And you hear all these debates, you know, one side says, and the other side, you know, so it's
it's all.
I mean, you can just look around and know that we're already in a recession. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, but you hear this debate. And so government data due this week, it's going to show that it fell. It could show that the GDP fell in the second quarter as well, like it did in the first quarter. Such a two-quarter decline often meets the common, though unofficial, definition of a recession. The National Bureau of Economic Research defines a recession as a significant decline in economic activity that is spread across the economy and that lasts more than a few months. What that means is that the downturn can't be isolated to one or two sectors, like just housing or technology. It has to be severe and long, although, you know, there can be some wiggle room. The collapse in economic activity in the first months of the pandemic was so broad and so severe that they declared, hey, that recession only lasted a few months, which is so ridiculous. We never came out of that recession. Americans feel terrible. And, of course, you know, as we just spoke about for the past 15, 20 minutes, we've had this layoff that peaked in the spring of 2020. The climbing cost of food, fuel, other essentials is eroding people's living standards. Hourly earnings adjusted for inflation are falling at their fastest pace in decades. In decades, Dave.
Yeah, and there are numerous signs that signal recession, or at least recessionary concerns. First, retail sales. Latest report from the Commerce Department shows that retail sales fell 0.3% in May and rose less than in April than initially reported. Next, you have consumer confidence. In June, as we told you, the University of Michigan's survey of consumer sentiment hit its lowest level in its 70-year history. Nearly half of respondents saying inflation is eroding their standard of living. Third, you have the housing market, which we've already talked about. Demand for real estate, construction of new homes beginning to slow. And those trends will almost certainly continue as interest rates rise, and real estate companies like Compass and Redfin have laid off thousands of employees in anticipation of a downturn. Four, startup funding. I mean, investments in startups have declined to their lowest level since 2019, dropping 23% over the last 3 months to $62 billion. And most of those startups, I read in another article, are these so-called SPACs that have no funding, no earnings whatsoever, just potential. it's like, what? You have the stock market, number five. The S&P had its worst half of a year since 1970. It's down close to 20% since the beginning of the year. Every sector of the index beyond energy is down. Next, you have copper. It's a commodity seen by a lot of people as a measure of the sentiment of the global economy because of its widespread use in buildings, cars, and other products. Well, copper's down more than 20% since January, hitting a 17-month low earlier this month. And, of course, there's oil. Crude prices are up this year. I mean, again, down recently, but up this year, in part because of supply constraints from Russia's invasion. But they've started to waver as investors worry about growth. And last but not least, Melody, the bond market, the good old bond market. Long-term interest rates in government bonds have fallen below short-term rates. That's an abnormal occurrence that we call a yield curve inversion. We talk about that a lot. And it suggests that investors are expecting an economic slowdown. Others, more specifically, will say that when this has happened in the past, without exception, by the way, a recession has always resulted no later than 8 months out. So, once again, Melody, like beauty, whether we're in a recession or not is in the eye of the beholder.
You know, this economy would be collapsing, and they'd still be cheerleaders coming out of D.C. saying, oh, this is just transitory. This is just a transition. We're transitioning. You know, they'll deny it.
I'll bring prices down.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see what we can do. And you can't forget that this is an election year. And so it's...
Beware not what they say in this year, but what they do or say they can do.
Yeah. Well, I'd rather have them just say what they can do and not do what they think they can do.
less damage.
Less damage. Although Greenspan said the Fed, it's not what we do, it's what we say that matters. Yes. We do very little sometimes, and it's a continuing release of words that nobody understands or knows they're lying or not telling the truth or just avoiding the truth just to keep things, everybody fat and happy. So anyway, it's...
Do you see this one about algorithms increasing prices?
Yeah, it's... it's, I don't know how many people do shopping online. I shop online, and you find an item, you add it to your cart, and then when you get around to paying for it, the price is increased. And you know what? I don't know if I've ever really noticed, because that's just one thing. I mean, I look at the price when I buy it. I look at the price when I buy it, when I add it to the cart, but once it's in the cart, I don't look at it again. Do you?
The only thing I tend to look at is the quantity. Sometimes,
yeah.
I double click and order it twice unintentionally, but the price, typically not.
Yeah, so I wouldn't notice. But when that happens, you can thank the pricing algorithms. Now, these are just computer programs that look at such factors as supply, demand, and the price competitors, and the prices that competitors are charging, and then they adjust the price in real time. Now there are calls for greater regulation at a time when these tactics are expected to become more and more common. Now, a key thing about these algorithms is that given different inputs, like, I don't know, say time of day or weather or how many customers might be showing up, it might decide on a different price. Theoretically, algorithms like these could be good for competition. For example, if one business sets a price, the algorithm could automatically undercut it, resulting in a lower price for the consumer, but it really doesn't work that way. Alexander McKay, he's an economics professor. He said in a paper he co-authored in the National Bureau of Economic Research, he studied the way algorithms compete. And he found that when multiple businesses use pricing algorithms, both knew that decreasing the price would cause their rival to decrease their price, which could set off a never-ending chain of price decreases. And he said, this, McKay said, takes price competition off the table. So why try to start a price war against a firm whose algorithm will see my price change and immediately undercut it? So the impact of algorithms can be more than just a few extra dollars at checkout. During the 2017 terrorist attack on the London Bridge, Uber's pricing algorithm sensed the increased demand and the price of a ride surged in the area. Uber later manually halted surge pricing, and then they did refund the users, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, Ticketmaster, if you're a concert goer, Ticketmaster is getting hammered this week. One of their customers, Bruce Springsteen, whose tour is just announced and tickets went on sale today, have been the victim, I'll say, of this kind of pricing algorithm, where prices you'd expect be $150, over $1,000.
Oh my gosh!
And that's not resale, it's just it's not good.
And it's not good because we're heading into a break also. But we'll be right back. That's the good part. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
King of the United States. Kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TimUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. She's at 1-800-375-4188. Now, I hope we don't sound like a broken record, repeating portions of the same topics over and over. This one's important. I mean, there's a new attack on the Fed, the Federal Reserve. This one's from Elizabeth Warren, one of Jerome Powell's nemeses. It's an early sign that the Fed faces a rocky path ahead in navigating the politics of 2022. Fed's going to simultaneously face the music for allowing high inflation to take hold and for the economic pain resulting from its efforts to bring down prices. Fed has left itself in a precarious position with lawmakers and the public at large amid soaring inflation and a newly aggressive game of catch-up that risks a recession. A deep one, in fact. Warren writes in a Wall Street Journal op-ed that the Fed's rate hiking campaign, including another 75 basis point increase expected tomorrow, risks triggering, in her words, a devastating recession. Ultimately, she continued that the Fed has seized on aggressive rate hikes, a big dose of the only medicine at its disposal, even though they are largely effective against many of the underlying causes of this inflationary spike. The Biden administration has been content to put the Fed front and center on its messaging on inflation, too, extending deference to the Fed as the government's primary inflation fighter, trying to take the heat off itself. And as fellow Democrats in Congress, Warren, probably speaking for many on the left who are less than thrilled with this approach, they fear that the Fed's aggressiveness will mean lower wage workers bear the brunt of the tightening. It could prove an early sign of things to come. And it's not just the left. I mean, it's growing widespread. Jerome Powell has generally managed good relationships with the Biden administration and with both sides of the aisle on Capitol Hill, generally. Let's face it. I mean, on one hand, he did secure 80 Senate confirmation votes for a second term just 2 months ago. If anything, a lot of the criticism has come from Republicans and a handful of Democrats who blame Powell and the Fed for not acting sooner to rein in these soaring prices. But things can change quickly. The economy indeed falls into a recession. Elected officials may shout for easier money. And it's plausible the Fed will respond. In fact, like we said last segment, most people see the Fed cutting rates now sometime next year. This would be an inversion of the 2010s when the Fed took political heat for its low interest rate policies. Look for interest rate-sensitive industries like real estate to scream the loudest as higher rates start to cause pain there. Part of the Fed's lure is linked to the early 80s when under Chair Paul Volcker, when the Fed engineered a deep recession that succeeded in bringing inflation down. But high interest rates also spurred a public outcry, including protests by farmers on tractors at the Fed headquarters in D.C. and pieces of 2x4 lumber mailed in by angry construction interests. The bottom line, slowing economy, however we define it, is going to put the Fed in new political crosshairs. Stay tuned. Here's a disturbing story. Yes, concerning the Fed. New congressional investigation has found that China-based officials tried to build a network of confidants inside the Federal Reserve. It's true. And in some cases, they reportedly attempted to offer Fed employees lucrative contracts in exchange for confidential information about interest rate policy changes and the U.S. economy. The report, which has received strong pushback from the Fed, calls out a failure to counter a decade-long attempt by Chinese officials to infiltrate the world's most powerful central bank. And this is quite the eye-opener, ladies and gentlemen. The findings do stop short, however, of saying whether sensitive economic information had been compromised. The investigation was conducted by Republicans on the Senate Homeland Security Committee. Perhaps the most shocking details of the investigation concerns a Fed economist who traveled to Shanghai in 2019. The unnamed, Chinese officials threatened to imprison this official if he didn't disclose information about the U.S. economy, including about the tariffs, while the U.S. and China were in the middle of their tit-for-tat trade war. The unnamed economist was detained four separate times while on this trip, according to the investigative report. The staffer reported the incident to the Fed, who passed it along to the State Department and FBI. Now, the report, which relies and builds on a separate internal investigation conducted by the Fed itself in 2015, said the findings show sustained effort by China to gain influence over the Fed. Republicans say the Fed was unable to counter this threat effectively, but in a letter to Senator Rob Portman, the top Republican on the committee, Fed Chair Powell pushed back against the report's conclusions. Powell wrote, "We would be concerned with any supportable allegation of wrongdoing, whatever the source." In contrast, he added, "We are deeply troubled by what we believe to be the report's unfair, unsubstantiated and unverified insinuations about particular individual staff members." Powell also said that the Fed staff with access to sensitive information about the economy undergo comprehensive background checks, and it has technology that's used to prevent security breaches. The letter also said the Fed encourages staff to participate in engagements with other central banks, but officials must adhere to information security protocol and any alleged violation supposedly is investigated. Powell wrote, "Because we understand that some actors aim to exploit any vulnerabilities, our processes, controls, and technology are robust and updated regularly." It began its own internal probe after an outside source warned that foreign adversaries were offering compensated contractual relationships to an attempt to build alliances with Fed employees. The report says the Fed's probe identified a former employee with ties to a Chinese government-backed talent recruitment program, tried to pull in a network of as many as 13 researchers employed across 8 Fed regional banks. The Fed presented these findings to Congress in 2020, but now disputes many of the internal probe's claims and reportedly can't even locate parts of the investigative materials. Congressional report outlines a couple of the incidents concerning some of the 13 individuals. Now, with the abrupt resignations last year of Dallas Fed Pres Robert Kaplan and Boston Fed Pres Eric Rosengren over their stock and bond trading scandals, this is a fairly big concern. The report also says that the Fed started to ban officials from accepting pay from countries like China after Congress started its investigation. Very interesting. See how that unfolds. Now, and last today, our latest American Survival newsletter. Fifth Streets. This week's edition, as usual, has Doug Nolan's Credit Bubble Bulletin blog. Excellent in-depth look at what's going on in the world of finance. Plus Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought, an article on life expectancy, and Melody's financial markets recap. Plus, I have an article called Keep On Truckin'. Always been fascinated by trucks, big trucks, you know, the ones with 18 wheels, and the men and women who drive them. In fact, my first full-time job offer out of college way back in the day was from the American Trucking Association. But I declined that position to take one with another D.C. nonprofit didn't negate my lifelong fascination. One of my fondest memories of that era is my casual relationship with a guy who worked for National Geographic during the week and drove 500 to 1,000 miles round trip on weekends as an independent truck driver. When he retired from National Geo, he drove a lot more miles every week in his big truck to support his true love. Well, actually, true loves, if you count his lovely wife. So when I read over a year ago about the nation's big shortage of truck drivers, I thought about people like my old friend, not to mention its impact on our economy with already messed up supply chains. But today, more than 18 months later, Axios' Emily Peck asks, what trucker shortage? She writes that employers have managed to find and hire over 115,000 new truckers since the depths of the pandemic in 2020. At the height of the supply chain crisis, which is still ongoing, transportation companies pointed to a shortage of truckers as a contributing factor. Truckers and their advocates were quick to point out that low pay, poor working conditions, and high turnover were driving the growing problem. Now, Peck says, the shortage is getting better, even possibly over, pointing to a report from Transportation Market Research Group, ACT, which notes the driver supply, flipped from shortage to surplus in early 2022. The surge in hiring, according to Peck, comes as big wage increases and demand for trucks to deliver all the goods we've been buying are bringing loads of new drivers to the profession. Plus, she adds, some of the health constraints of the pandemic have begun to fade away. And now that federal stimulus checks are a thing of the past and prices are surging, driving a truck in an industry with wage growth that's outpacing inflation, you don't see it that much in others, looks unusually appealing. Andre Tomchik of Too Big to Fail Goldman Sachs says that employers have been trying to hire like crazy ever since the pandemic-induced demand surge led to relative capacity constraints in the trucking industry. So it's likely a reflection of some catch-up coming online. Over 20,000 more long-haul truckers got jobs in May. It's the largest monthly addition of new truckers since 1997. That's when the Bureau of Labor Statistics started tracking that number. In fact, long-haul trucking employment is now 2% above pre-pandemic levels. And average weekly earnings are about 11% higher, at least they were in May, compared to a year ago for drivers in freight trucking. According to BLS, the average weekly earnings of truck drivers have increased about 33% from January 2018 to May 2022 to $1,215, again, per week, which equates to about $63,000 a year, and that's average. Many veteran and independent long-haul drivers earn a lot more. Recently, more drivers have bought their own truck and, according to Peck, are taking advantage of a surge in spot prices, the live market rates for hauling. Kenny Veith, who's president of ACT, says a lot of people who wouldn't normally be a truck driver have become truck drivers. There are now a new millennium high of 1.1 million general freight truck drivers. That's up 28% from about 860,000 at the depths of the Great Recession. Still, the industry needs a lot more truckers, according to economist Bob Costello at, hey, the American Trucking Association. He confirmed some of the increase in employed truckers come from independents making the switch to full-time jobs. Plus, he adds, the increase in wages has also led some truckers to drive fewer hours. Peck notes that these dynamics also provide important clues about the health of the overall economy. Besides, there always have been trucker shortages. According to a 1914 article from Traffic World, practically every truck manufacturer and nearly all employers complain of the great difficulty of securing drivers who are competent. The more things change, the more they remain the same. Just don't mention a trucker shortage to the millions of other motorists who drive in HOV lanes during morning and afternoon rush hours, who see that 18-wheeler getting bigger and bigger in their rearview mirror. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday with Melody. Butch will join her tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye. You're a wealthy man.